Blog Talk Radio.
What if you and I could celebrate love, not just on those special holiday occasions like Valentine's Day, but all the time, in every moment, every day? Let us celebrate love, love in the past, love in the present, and love we have not yet known. Stay tuned for an inspired, loving conversation with gerontologist Holly Kelly. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the 30 Healing Through Love Lessons, life-changing lessons about love. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. And in every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 70s, and beyond. Gerontologist and journalist Holly Kelly provides an innovative, encouraging, and comforting way, and even fun way, to think about, prepare for, and plan our final affairs at any age. She's a gerontologist and a fellow in thanatology, an international and national multi-award-winning author of the Amazon number one new release, Sunrises and Sunsets, Final Affairs, Forged with Flair, Finesse, and Functionality. And she emphasizes the word fun. Holly is considered a death change agent and cultural aging influencer, a transformational keynote speaker, and host of the popular Aging Gratefully radio show, which I've had the pleasure of appearing on a few times. She's a wonderful host. She's also founder of the Ladder Life Planning Institute, whose mission is to encourage everyone to live vibrantly, plan thoughtfully, and age dynamically. And she teaches us how. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you today, Holly Kelly.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Erica. I'm so delighted to be on the show, and I absolutely love this topic so much. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, our topic is to celebrate love, past, present, and future.
So, and I love that. I love this topic because the rest of our life and beyond, because we know that death ends a life but not a relationship. So I just love how you captured all of it.
But just briefly before we start, I would love you to just share a little bit about how you became a gerontologist. I know you're not older. A lot of people go into the field of gerontology when they get older and they're thinking about aging themselves. But you're a lot younger, and you went into this field. So just tell us a brief, you know, description of why, how this came about.
Well, I was the only person that could handle my most cantankerous grandfather. And so I think that I realized very young that I had a way with the most challenging kind of individuals. And when somebody tells me that somebody is extremely difficult, and particularly when it is somebody that is older, I think that I see past that, and I realize that I always had a way, and I wasn't exactly sure what it was that I was doing, but I always understood that something else was going on. And I never saw the problem that people were referring to. I think I always saw this human being that had something else going on that needed to just be seen or understood. And I never seemed to have encountered the problems that people were talking about, but I was always able to relate and get past that and find such a beautiful camaraderie. And we were able to forge through whatever we needed to do. And so I found an incredible love and was able to have relationships with people that were older than me. And I just loved the wisdom that could be imparted. And I saw such beauty in aging. So it was a natural path for me to take my next degree to become a gerontologist. And I was really excited about it. And I have so much passion for this field.
Well, you just added something that I really haven't heard before. Most, I don't know what their inner working is, but most gerontologists probably do not say, I love older people. You know, they may be doing it because they want to know about their own health or for different reasons. But what a beautiful reason to get into this field.
Yes, and aging is something that everybody is doing. And so it's so important that we do have people working in this field, because an infant is born and begins, you know, aging, and certainly even in utero. So everybody is aging, and the centenarian is aging. So it is something that the one commonality that we all share in life, as different as we are, everybody is aging.
Right. And I remember being a lot younger, and you have this kind of, I don't want to call it cocky, but a certain attitude that you're going to go on forever. You're not going to have those problems that you see the other people having as they get older. So you provide a real overview for people about what's possible with aging.
Yes, and how great that aging can be. And I always say, love the stage you're in, and I put quotation marks around the A-G-E in the word stage, because I want people to embrace every facet of their lives and not have a grim perspective about what is to come. I want them to embrace whatever phase of life that they're in and love the stage that they're in. And there is so many studies that show that if you embrace wherever you're at, and if you have a positive perspective about aging, you are actually going to live longer and have longevity and have better health. And so those positive outlooks actually affect how you age. And so that's actually very healthy for us to have those types of outlooks.
Right. And even that Harvard study, it went on for decades. And the quality that they found the most common in the people that aged well and were healthier was love. They had loving relationships. So,
yes.
As opposed to the people that had struggles in their relationships. So that leads me to the next question. Valentine's Day is only a few weeks away, and most of us think of how we will spend this Valentine's Day, whether we're with someone or not with someone, and if we don't have anyone, we could be very upset, and if we're missing someone, we can be very upset. But we're not thinking about our own death and loss and planning our final affairs for a day, hopefully in the distant future, when I will no longer be here. How can that affect my life and my Valentine's Day this year, or even my day right now?
So pretty much planning for your future allows you to actually, if you get your planning done now, you are giving yourself the peace of mind, certainly, to have done this. You have gifted yourself, of course, being free of burden of what is to come. That is certainly important. But something else that you've done is you've given the people that love you this beautiful gift that they will so much treasure. and that is that you've outlined everything.
Holly, just a moment.
Yes.
Just explain what you mean by planning for the future. What exactly is that?
Planning for the future can encompass so many things. This could be that you have outlined your wishes in great detail so that you have made every decision as it relates to your end-of-life care, how you want everything to go if something were to happen to you and you were incapacitated, what type of care that you would desire. Would you want nutrition? Would you want hydration? What decisions would you want to be made on your behalf? And so you would outline, you know, very specifically in an advanced directive what you would want done. And this is something that is such a simple form that people can do, and they're available online, and most people are not doing it. Less than 27% of people are not filling out a simple advanced directive form. And so that's something that everybody, I would encourage everybody to do this. I ask people to do this every show practically that I do, is to complete an advanced directive. They're free and they're available even in every language, in Braille, and you would fill one out for every state that you live in. They are state appropriate, and if you travel and have a second home in another state, you would need one in that state as well. And you would designate a healthcare proxy as well, and that is somebody to make decisions on your behalf in case you become incapacitated. The other thing that you would...
Let me just say something here, because my aunt was 96 years old, and she had a will, and she had a good amount of money and a condo, and she didn't have the right proxy. She didn't have a proxy to oversee it. So before she passed away, she had dementia, and my cousin, her daughter, with her caretaker, changed my aunt's will and got my aunt to sign it. They went to a different attorney, and if my aunt had had a proxy watching over it, that would not have happened. And then, you know, it was kind of downhill from there.
It's a very big decision who you are going to have handling. And I talk about this so much in my book, Sunrises and Sunsets, Final Affairs Forged with Flair, Finesse, and Functionality. I talk about the gravity of the decision of who's going to be your decision maker, and that this is so huge, who you are going to have make this decision for you, and that a lot of times who it is, quote, supposed to be, may not be the best person. And I actually give a story in there about that. Sometimes we just think it is automatically default this person. And I tell the story about how in a situation where it is naturally this person, and how everything went wrong when it was this person, and that we really need to take a look at our lives. And it was a story about a lady whose husband was her decision maker, and how really their life had been nothing but turmoil, and that she had been a wife that had been, it wasn't publicly known, but her life had been a life of abuse her entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in the end, didn't make decisions that were in her best interest, and her siblings were devastated about, her siblings and her children, her three grown sons were so upset about how her husband had handled things at the end, and they could do nothing about it, nothing. And all they kept saying was they, you know, stormed the hospital, they confronted the doctor, and all they kept saying was she didn't want this. And, oh, the turmoil, it was absolutely terrible. And so I talk about the gravity of this decision and how you can definitely remove all of that anguish and leave a lot of love behind if you make the right decision and definitely choose the right person for this that's going to honor you. So don't just make it by default. Definitely, you know, spend a lot of time doing due diligence and making sure it's somebody that's going to honor your wishes as you want them. And, I mean, even down to she wanted a burial, not cremation. There was just so many things that went wrong in this. The next thing that you can do to plan ahead, and I outline this. There's just so many different things. It's different for everybody, is to meticulously plan every detail of your post-death. What do you want for a funeral or a memorial? What types of things do you want there so others don't have to make those decisions for you? And another thing that I absolutely love and recommend is leaving beautiful, beautiful letters to loved ones so that your legacy and your love remains long after your departure, and that you are sending literally your love from the other side, and that you are continuing to thrive and to be able to send your messages to the people that you love in letters. You can even send them to grandchildren yet to be born. You can say to my daughter on your wedding day, if you feel that you have been dealt a card and you are going to miss major milestones, you are literally able to write and be able to be present via a handwritten letter for these events and impart the types of written things that you want to share.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So I have another question now. Many widows who have lost a beloved spouse, not a difficult spouse, someone they really loved and they had a good life together, they may feel depressed and lonely around significant holidays such as Valentine's Day. How can they savor the love that they had shared now at this time, even when the partner is no longer physically present?
It is so easy to get trapped in the quicksand of what once was. And so I think it's so important to not deny and to keep the memory alive. So there's so many ways to do that. And if you just had the love of your life and you really are missing that person, I think it's great to plant a tree in honor of your loved ones. Maybe if they had a lot of friends and everybody, this was the person that everybody just really missed, I say pull over. Even, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, particularly, I know the show is Valentine's, but I say even for holidays, if it's that person's birthday, you know, you could have people over and you could say, okay, we're celebrating the birthday and we are here. Everybody leaves with a memorial. You know, they have the shrubs, and everybody plants one in their yard, and that way everybody has something that they have left with that is going to grow, and everybody has a piece of that person that every time they look at that tree in their yard, it is that individual. So there's so many ways to keep the memory alive and to make it special and not a sad, negative thing, but something that everybody's laughing about. And there is, you could do a quilt. The person that's missing their loved one could create a photo quilt. And if they don't quilt themselves, you can go online and you can literally create one. You throw all your photos together and they ship the quilt to you. And this is a beautiful way to make Valentine's special. And now you have this quilt that is a memorial of your memories. And so there's just so much that you can do that is a keepsake, that is a beautiful tribute to the person that you're missing.
And I heard something online that was a video where the guy was saying that there are three deaths. The first one, I think, is when you become terminally ill. The second one is after you actually pass away and you're pronounced dead. And the third time is when the very last person mentions your name. So I love what you just did, because if you plant trees and everyone knows, even if they're small shrubs, whatever, everyone knows that it was in that person's name, years and years, decades later, someone can still be mentioning that person's name. It's beautiful.
Well, here's what's sad, is that there is so much attention while someone is, you know, maybe on hospice or during the time of decline, and at the time of passing away, and we have a funeral or we have a memorial, and the family is receiving so much support and they're receiving so much love. And then afterwards, friends and family may be checking on them. And then everybody has their own life, obviously, and their lives go on and they get covered up and overcome by all of the things that are, you know, needing their attention. And so they forget because it's not their journey of grief. And so, you know, they get caught up in their work and their lives and their things. But the person that is suffering so much anguish and so much loss, and in the, you know, I call it the quicksand of grief, they're walking that life and they're overcome. And yet everybody else, you know, has continued on in what's going on in their lives. And so they're kind of now alone again. Not so many people checking on them anymore. And so it is great that we have a way to keep the memory alive, that we do keep celebrating it, because it is so important that the person doesn't vanish. I say all the time, we know death doesn't end a life, it ends a life, but not a relationship. I say, you know, take that person's favorite shirts and make a pillow out of them and put them around your house and smile when you see them. And plant trees and go make memorial stones and just, you know, go name a star. You get a certificate or personal message and send that to that person and put a powerful message. And when they look up at the night sky or to the heavens, they look up there and they say, that's my baby star up there. There's just so much that you can do. And every night they look to the night sky and go, hey, baby, I see you.
It's beautiful. And also just feeling that love and appreciating that you actually have felt love. Someone else loved you too, that you had a mutual love. Not everybody has that. Even through their whole life, they don't have such a beautiful love. So if you focus on the love, which I love to do, it makes a huge difference. So now I have another question. Many men and women, after a rejection and severe heartbreak, not a death, but, you know, a real heartbreak, they continue to hold angry resentments. What can a person who's been rejected in love do to release the unhappy memories and start creating more loving moments?
I definitely feel it's so important to keep your house in order and to absolve your conscience. That is so important in life, because if you don't, then you've allowed, you know, what if something happens? Life is, you know, the great unknown. And I say all the time, it's called an accident because it's not a, you know, it's not on purpose. And so life unexpected happens. So what if you're walking around the islands and you walk under a coconut tree and you get hit in the head and now you are no more. And you have all this unresolved regret that you haven't got right. So the people that you didn't get it right with have to spend the rest of their lives with this issue that you didn't resolve. And that's terrible that they have to live their life with an apology that never was. So I say it's so important to live in love, live in peace 24/7, 365, and 366 days in a leap year. Because why wait till your deathbed? That isn't the best time, because you may not have that opportunity. Tomorrow may not come. You could walk under a coconut tree and get hit in the head. It is so important that you give yourself the gift of peace, but more importantly, to not carry the burdens. That luggage is really heavy on our conscience and on our psyche. And think about how nice it would be to absolve the peace with that other person and live in love with them. It's not doing anybody any good.
What if you can't actually speak to them? What do you recommend that a person do if they're sitting with this hurt? You know, it was unexpected. They're devastated. They're feeling alone now. He or she is with a new partner, you know, and they just feel hopeless.
I say always to write letters, and even if they're never sent, sometimes I say write it all down, everything that you're feeling, all the pain you're feeling, get it all out, everything, no matter how it comes out, if it's angry, if it's ugly, if it's awful, write it all down, everything you're feeling, and then take a deep breath, look at it, read it, say, I let this go, I am done with this, and then take it outside somewhere where there's no dry shrubs or anything, and on concrete, light it on fire and burn it and say, I'm free. And you set it on fire, and then you are officially, you mm-hmm. are done. You let it go. You burn the paper.
And did people ever have to do that more than once?
I know that people have done that, and they say that it is amazing how I felt that was just going to be symbolic. And yet I did, I went through the process of that, and I was free. I actually was free. I just thought that this was going to be a series of events for me. And there was something that happened in the journaling. There was something that happened in my mindset. And there was some sort of spiritual shift. And I was literally free.
So what you just shared is kind of a ceremony to release yourself from those unhappy, resentful feelings, and to release
it is
the
almost
other person.
It's almost a washing and cleansing of your soul.
And there really is energy in the universe that we can send messages to people through the air, like radio waves, thought waves that we don't realize. So this is really cleansing something. But I have another question related to that, though. How can organizing your final affairs prepare you to let go of these hurts that you may have had? You may have been deeply wounded and hurt. And how can you let go of that and create, like really prepare to create a new loving relationship or more than one loving relationship by planning your final affairs?
It's very interesting what happens when you start looking and making big decisions about the end of life, because they are very, you know, they're decisions with some serious gravity, and they're important ones that really only you should be making. You shouldn't leave these sorts of things to people that you love. You don't want to burden someone else with these decisions. And what happens is once you've made and you start making these big decisions, you realize that, wow, life is pretty precious, and you want to get to some serious living, because you're like, wow, I'm facing my own death. And it's kind of like when you go to a funeral. Funerals, I say, are one of the most sobering things we can do. And we leave there, we leave a funeral really appreciating life, really hard to not leave a funeral with some serious, serious life appreciation. The same thing happens when you plan your own death, when you plan your own funeral, when you start making big decisions about your end of life. You leave there with some serious desire to start living your best life now, and to say, you know what, every day is precious and every moment is gifted, and I'm going to start living in love, and I'm going to start taking things a little less serious, and I'm really ready to start getting behind some of, you know, life's more precious moments. And I think that the same shift that I said happens when you decide to absolve your grief, regrets, there's a shift that happens when you plan for the end. It inspires this grand new beginning in you, and you're ignited with love for yourself and to start living.
Wow, it's so true that by realizing our mortality, that it really is something real, then that can shock us into wanting to live in the moment. So along with that, your own body you down. You can have an illness, a chronic illness, aches and pains, especially as you get older. Arthritis, diabetes, all these different ailments. And there are symptoms involved with that. So why is it important to really be knowledgeable about the different ailments out there and about your own personal health and what's good and what's not so good, but also about anyone that's close to you, your spouse, your children, your parents, to really understand their health or their health issues? How does that help us to love more?
Well, I think it's important that we do love our body because it is the means in which we get around in life. And so it's important that we take care of it. And taking care of those around us is really important. I believe that if you're really in tune with your body and you know what's going on and you pay very close attention to anything, and I think that's important that people make an effort to do that and that you pay very close attention and be mindful of that. And everybody can if you are dedicated to it. And the smallest little thing, I think you would begin to start noticing. So that's really important, is that you just decide, I'm going to start paying super close attention to maybe how I feel after I eat this, or you know, what happens here and this and that. And that in and of itself might start leading you to becoming more healthy overall. And it's very important what types of things we decide to partake in as far as herbs and supplements and doing your research, because there's so many different companies out there that want a piece of our business. And they might not have your best interest in mind, so that's extremely important. And the people that you love, you certainly want them to have their preventative care and their well checks and things like that. It's so easy to get busy in life and to overlook that. And I'd have to say that there are few things in life more important than that. So many people have well benefits, well care benefits, and they don't access them. And that is something that is just so important. And they're like, well, if nothing's broke, I don't need to fix it. When in fact, it's just so important that you just make sure that everything's okay. Because
break in one moment. It breaks over
correct.
A long period of time, your body. But there was another aspect to that question. And that is, why is it so important to understand the ailments and that people go through when you're dealing with a partner, a loving a partner, but they have some kind of ailment? How does understanding it help you to feel good and help the other person?
I think it's very important because you're journeying together and you want to be supportive. I think it's important that you know what the other person needs and that you help them. Sometimes people have a diagnosis and they're very scared about what's to come, and you need to be supportive and to help them and to know that you are going to be there for them. Sometimes you need to be their advocate or to stand by their side. Sometimes you need to calm them down and tell them that, you know, there's so much that can happen while we age. Sometimes somebody shouldn't be permitted to Google because they aren't the type of person that can be overwhelmed with data. So the other partner needs to take over and be able to decipher and say, look, you don't have, you know, 27 different diseases. It's just mild arthritis in your knee, you know. So I think it's very important that in relationships of love, that it's the relationship dynamic is well understood, who knows the other, that each person knows each other, and that you support each other successfully.
Yeah, and what I was thinking about is particular ailments, such as diabetes, where someone may have, you know, the blood sugar goes up and down, and they may have temper tantrums. But if you don't know that that's connected to diabetes, you know, you can be very upset with them, and you know, and you can make more out of it than it really is. The same with dementia.
Definitely, yes.
That people sometimes mm-hmm. get, you know, a few things. They could get very rowdy, you know, nasty maybe, but they can also get hypersexual because mm-hmm. that's something that starts to happen, I think, with Alzheimer's more than dementia. But I'm saying if you understand those things, you can be more helpful all around.
Correct. Yes.
Holly, we're coming toward the end, so please tell us about your book and workshops that you do. What do you offer, and how can you help people?
Well, I definitely enjoy doing keynote speaking, and I take the fear and trepidation out of planning for the end and death conversations, and just really enjoy inspiring people of how to make planning fun. I have a 12-step process called Created Peace, because that's what it does. It creates peace in your life and inspires people to live their best life now. My book is Sunrises and Sunsets, Final Affairs Forged with Flair, Finesse, and Functionality, and that's available on Amazon Prime. And you can look me up at the Latter Life Planning Institute.com. That's www.latter, LATTER, lifeplanninginstitute.com. And I just enjoy really the work that I do in helping people plan really in a fun, dynamic way for end of life through any workshops that a group might want. They can request a workshop, and it's just a really fun way to get your final affairs done. And of course, the books are also available through my website if somebody wants a signed author copy.
Well, Holly, it's a delight again to be speaking with you. You bring so much love and peace to people around the world. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much. And I totally love the work that you do as a healing through love mentor, and certainly always love connecting with you. And we will be doing a show together, and it's called Cupid's Valentine's World Tour. And we're really excited about that. That's on the Aging Gratefully radio show, and we'll be doing that on February 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific time, and then it will go to podcast. So I'm excited to have you as a guest on the show, too.
Thank you. I love the title. I hadn't heard the actual title before. It's great. Thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And to those of you listening, I look forward to speaking to you again soon. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, and please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com. And there are some free reports, lots of videos and audios. And if you would like a consultation, get your own Healing Through Love consultation. Just send a little note in the email, and I'll be happy to connect with you. Look forward to speaking to you again soon.